the teaching is given to in the languages of all different beings. Homage to the Buddha for teaching dependent origination out of his compassion to rid us of all distorted views. Lama Thubten Sueba Rinpoche has made this request, I think, this year, because of the terrible earthquake. Many people have died, and then after that, due to political problems, the people in Nepal are facing lots of problems with the lack of medicine for the sick and also for the provisions. So Rinpoche has requested me to make this request. Since the time of Songtsen Gampo, the Tibetan 33rd king in the 7th century, the Tibetan Nepal had a special connection. And in the Jokang in Lhasa, the murals inside the temple are drawn by Nepalese artists. And we also have the tradition of Nepalese art in Tibet. So mainly, of course, people have died, and I mean, the sufferings and so forth are because of their karmas. And then because of the climate change, the increase in heat, and due to which many disasters are happening. And then after thousands or hundreds of thousands of years, the tectonic plates of the earth seems to change its position as well. And we talk about the triachilocosmum, and there is also, which may be reference to galaxies. And so these also change. The galaxies as a whole also change. Although we are not aware of these changes, lots of changes are going on in the whole galaxies. And due to natural calamities, and people suffer lots of rain, where there didn't used to have much rain, such as in Chennai, for example. There's lots of floods happening in South India, and so people are suffering a lot and have great difficulties. And in Nepal, the people are suffering due to the terrible earthquakes. Of course, we can't do much, but I did make some donation. So I have heard that many of the monastics were really able to serve the people well. And the monastics, monks, and the monasteries and nunneries, I would like to praise you and I thank you for serving the general public. So when we have nothing else to do, when it's something is beyond our power, what we can do is only pray. And people here, we are gathered, a huge number of people are gathered here, not for business, nor for some kind of a spectacle, entertainment, but for the Buddha Dharma. And the essence of which is bodhicitta, this altruistic mind holding others to be more dear to oneself. And so we are engaged in this discourse on this topic. And therefore, for all sentient beings in the three realms of existence, and also including the, we should include the Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddha Arahats, So for the sake of all sentient beings, we generate bodhicitta, as it is said in the prayer, having generated the supreme bodhicitta, I will invite all sentient beings as my guests. And I will engage in the supreme enlightened practices of bodhisattvas. And therefore, when our neighboring countries are suffering a lot, even if we may not be able to do much, but at least I would like to request all of you to make your fervent prayers. And so at one time there was a cloud burst in Ladakh, and then after some months after that, I went there and I did some prayers. So we had a prayer ceremony there, and so I would request everyone here to make your prayers for the people suffering. So I heard that there were some pages missing in my text regarding the bodhicitta, generation of bodhicitta. So, So, Shamar Lamrim, 464. So, with regard to the cultivation of seeing or remembering all sentient beings as one's mother, it's a very difficult thing to do. But whatever may happen, and if you are not able to, it says that if you're not able to generate this, then go to a secluded place where there's no one, and then put your hand on your cheek, and you should do your best to put effort in. So in the Nyingma practice, sometimes the disciples are recommended to go into the forest where there are no people, nobody. And so in order to understand the differentiation, to be able to differentiate between samsara and nirvana, or it says, take a break and go to such a place, a secluded place, and put your hand on your cheek, and then you may even call out, "All mother, all my mother, sentient beings," and to the point that you could cry, and you may make a call of lamentation. And then in the certain rite of ordination or something, it is said that, so on the from the opposite side, it is said that it is untrue that all sentient beings have not been your mother. And so if you say that the sentient beings had not been your mother in this and the other lives, and that you had no mother, it is quite obvious that you have a mother in this life. And And so you cannot hold a position that you have not been born to a mother, but only to a miraculous rebirth in the past lives. And when you were born in the wombs, I mean, from the womb of a mother, you had a mother, and you had the need of a mother. And so when you were born and from a womb, 100,000 times, you had 100,000 mothers. So in the text, there is some mention of taking breath inside the womb, but His Holiness says that the fetus does not breathe when it's inside the mother's womb. So it's fed through the umbilical cord of the mother, which is attached to the fetus. And so it could be quite, give you a sense of wonder, how could this happen? And if you accept a theistic creator God, you could just say, oh, of course, it's the power of, due to the power of the God that this can happen. But it is quite clear that things happen for us due to our karma. But then when you think of generations of people or generations of species of different kinds, then perhaps the Darwinian theory of evolution could be more suitable to assert. So as soon as a child is born from the mother's womb, after delivery, then the child cries, and sometimes the children are hit at the butt, at their buttocks, and so that they could make a noise and breathe. And so, thinking along these lines, it says that since the beginningless rebirths, all sentient beings have been my mother countless times, and think that this is true, definitely true. And you could feel that by thinking along these lines. And then after that, the second point is the reflection or recollecting the kindness of mother sentient beings. First, imagine your old mother of this life in that kind of old aspect of an aged mother. And then bring up in your thought that this mother had not only been my mother in this life alone, but since beginningless time, she has been my mother countless times. And each time she had been my mother. First, she held me in my womb for 9 months and 10 days, and then, as said in the liberation in the palm of your hand, also. And then, concerned about the fetus, what the mother has done, my mother has done, is that she tied her belt rather not tightly, thinking that when concerned that it would hurt the womb, the fetus. And then, even though she felt hungry or thirsty, she would not concerned that if she took something, it would hurt the fetus, and so she would abstain from taking drinks and food sometimes, certain food and drinks, despite her hunger and thirst. And then wherever she goes or sits or whatever activities she's engaged in, she was engaged in, she disregarded her own happiness and joy, but did all things only which is means to only which are means to help the fittest. And therefore, she gave me this precious human life and in the beginning, and she's kind in to me in that way. And then even as animals, and so the animals, even the mother animals, what they would do is when someone hits them with a stone or something, they would actually turn around and show their backside in order to protect, concerned that the rock would hurt the fetus. And so human beings being having this intelligence, there's no need to mention that their mothers feel very dear about their fetus. And as soon as one is born, the baby is like a naked worm and cannot actually take the weight bear the weight of their head or their limbs. So they cannot stand still, and they cannot bear anything, any unfavorable condition, nor are they able to know anything. They are innocent. And so the mother has taken care of us as if having found, although we were a bundle of filth, maybe dirt on our body and so forth. The mother never felt repulsion, but felt delight and joy as if finding some, as if a beggar has found some treasure. And then she washed me with all kinds of means and wiped me clean and put me on soft clothes and put me wrapped me in them. And when I cried, she would fiddle or fondle with me with her fingers and play with me with her fingers and concerned that I would be cold, I feel cold, and she would embrace me to close to her body and so forth. And so His Holiness finished reading the part that was missing from his text. So I've covered that part. And next section is the rest of the part His Holiness already covered, and now we are at this third section. It says the third, which is having cultivated bodhicitta, how to train in the practices. And so regarding this practice, first use the same practice or the preliminary practices that were given earlier at this point also. And then with regard to the actual explanation of the practices, so for human beings, Of course, it's not just about talking, teaching them religion, but for our temporary, short-term as well as long-term goal of happiness, we could give advice or some suggestions and to help people, because we have a language, our languages, which are varied. We have various languages, and we could communicate with other people using our languages. So even if we are not able to help all sentient beings, for the rest of the beings, we could make prayers, but we as human beings are directly related to the 7 billion people on this earth, the rest of the 7 billion people on this earth, and we can do something to help them. And so, in order to help and benefit them, I mean, whatever you could do, giving a kind advice or suggestions and so forth, you should do that. And so we should try to, the text says that we should help the sentient beings to from dangers. And so if you look at the animals, the bugs and so forth, save their life if they are in danger because of water or rain and so forth. And so with regards to these, the practice of giving, in the great treatise of in Lamrim Chemo by Tsongkhapa, there are mentions of what could be given, what could should not be given, and so forth. The time and the appropriate time and appropriate things to be given, and so forth. And so next. And so, with regard to the giving, practice of giving, there is the preliminary practice and called the actual action and the motivation. Lomrim Chemo is our, should be used like our. Discipline text, and so we should have hold that beside us, and whenever we can, we should read the relevant parts wherever we have reached, and the writings of Master Tsongkhapa is each word has its meaning and could lead us to fulfill the rest of the goals, and so. Except at some points, Jerembuche, of course, quotes Kadamba masters, but the rest of the texts mainly are based on the classic Indian treatises. And so it's very important to study his Lamrim texts. So with regard to giving, so first let me just go through the actual practice. It says, so there are the six perfections to ripen one's own practice of the Dharma, the teaching of the Buddha. And then there are these four ways of attracting disciples to ripen others. So when you offer some alms, it is important, as Ratnavadi says, to give them with respect. Although we do give things to the beggars and so forth, I mean, we sometimes tend to look down upon them with that kind of a negative attitude we give. Of course, we have maybe we are able to fulfill our own goals, but when you give something to the beggars, always do that with respect to them. And so with regard to the first ripening one's own self, there are six. First is giving, then next, second, morality, third is uh, patience. Fourth, effort, joyous effort. And the fifth is concentration. And sixth is the wisdom. So if something is both beneficial in the short term as well as long term, we should do practice that. But sometimes if things are, if something that you do could is beneficial in the short run, but bad in the long run, then you should not do that. And then with regard to giving, the first part, so you should have this the thought to give, the intention to give, and with that motivation, so while you are engaged in giving by using your body or your speech, at that point, the thought to give, the intention or the thought to give is the nature of giving or generosity. So giving one's body, its resources, one's roots of virtues and all, without any sense of loss, but sincerely giving them, and so when you are, when you have perfected that sense of giving without any sense of loss, you have the perfection of wisdom. And so for the monks, the text says that you should keep the three robes as if they are like the skin of your body. That's where the comment Solness was making. So with regard to giving, there is there are three types of giving. Giving dharma, and the next is giving materials, material things. So with regard to giving dharma, so without regard for any gain, any material gain, but with a sincere heart, if you're in giving teachings, correct teachings of the holy dharma to the fortunate, those who are receptive, and giving the things which are logic, which are reasonable, unlike giving, unlike the practice of art and so forth, which the mundane, worldly things, which in the end are turn out to be to have bad effects, and then also making people to keep their precepts, and then giving, and there is also the giving of fearlessness. So regarding this, one should save beings from the fearful states of being punished by or beaten by the kings, and also being robbed by the robbers and bandits and called thieves and so forth, and also the saving people from the fearful states from the threats of tigers, lions, and crocodiles and so forth. And also saving beings from fire or the threat of water and so forth. And then with regard to giving materials, So the things that you give should be without any objection or any kind of negative criticisms. And you give these to those such beings, such as your adversaries or your near and dear ones, as well as other people, ordinary people, whether they are low or high. So your motivation should not be inferior types of motivation, such as haughtiness or thinking and considering whatever you are doing as being the best and so forth. And so through these kind of practices of not without of giving the materials without haughtiness and also free from any faults of the four and objects and so forth, you should try to reach the perfection of giving. So you should observe the purpose of giving, or the purpose of giving. And then you should also, with regard to the objects that you are giving, you should think that, oh, right from the beginning, I have dedicated all these, whatever I have, for the sentient beings. And therefore, when you are giving something taken from your resources, you should think that, oh, I am actually taking something that is deposited with me, and that others have deposited with me, and giving them these things. And then think that these beings to whom I am giving are the ones who are agents for who help me to complete my practice of giving in order for me to reach the perfection of giving. So in this way, you should observe the purpose and the purpose of giving, and then the object that you are giving, and also thinking that this that you are these beings are the agents for the perfection of giving. And and then there are and so with regard to giving, you should see whether it is appropriate or not to give things. for example, until you have developed the strength of heart, the inner strength of compassion, the great compassion, to the point that you will not feel despondent to give something. It is, you should not give your body. And so with regard to the patience, practice of patience, His Holiness is recommending that you should study the sixth chapter of Bodhisattva Charya Avatara by Shandideva, and also Chandrakirti's chapter in Madhyamaka Avatara, where he also deals with the practice of giving. (Clears throat) So there are times with regard to time that certain practice of giving may not be appropriate to engage in, such as not giving body when the time is not right. And so these texts goes through the different reasonings that are given in the Bodhisattva Acharya Avatara. So His Holiness is on the practice of patience, and in between we have the practice of the rest part of the practice of giving, and also the perfection of training in the morality. So when people criticize you or backbite at you, you should show patience. So the text says that one should not, it's not right to engage or to create, to engage in the, to become angry merely for some trivial gain in this life, because that anger could cause you suffering for many lifetimes. So with regards to the patience, so one should not be overwhelmed by those that harm you, and also the sufferings. So if you look at the sixth chapter on patience in the Bodhisattva Acharya Avatara, it gives lots of reasonings to counter the anger, and because there are lots of reasons which make the anger rather dumbfounded that you find in that text. So because of suffering that you undergo, it helps to overcome your pride or arrogance, and it helps to, as an impetus to push you, impetus to liberation. So if you are able to face this, the problems and the sufferings and so forth, then you could actually take it into the path. There are lots of benefits, the text says. So it is worthwhile suffering for the sake of the Dharma, because it helps in the end oneself as well as all others. So in order to help all sentient beings, why should I not undergo all these hardships and problems? So you should also could feel happy that you have the opportunity to undergo these hardships. So with regard to the sufferings that you would willingly undergo or accept, sorry. So there are the sufferings such as called having a very poor and little meals and so forth, which actually helps one to increase one's practice of morality by keeping the one's robes. And rather having a little want with the regard to these.
(Clears throat)
And then there are the sufferings that you suffer, nine types of suffering in relation to the eight worldly concerns, such as gain and fame and so forth, and the mundane, called and worldly gain, worldly dharmas. And so, also there's suffering when you try to train your mind to overcome the obscurations on the mind day and night, wherever you are, whether sitting or moving. And so, and then also, making offerings and giving gifts to the three jewels and one's guru, spiritual masters, and also upholding the dharma and so forth. These, in fact, is, and when you put effort in preserving these dharma practices, there is also suffering. So, which is which you could, which you should willingly accept. And then, I mean, it says that you also have to live by begging food, and where while doing that, you could have a bad figure and bad look and so forth. And so you should not, so with, when you practice these, His Holiness comments that you should not expect the results right away, quickly, and in fact be able to persevere in undergoing the hardships for your dharma practice. And with regard to the practice of patience, there is the patience. Which definitely thinks or is intent on the dharma. And and so when you feel demoralized, that is to be overcome in this practice. So that was regarding the practice of the next perfection, which is the perfection of great joyous effort. And so the nature of joyous effort is feeling joy in collecting or in gathering the practice of dharma, as well as gathering the virtues and virtuous dharmas, and also being happy to engage in the practices for the benefit of sentient beings. And when you have perfected the familiarization with it, then you that is the perfection of joyous effort. And it has three divisions. Armor-like. And the other two. So, so when you engage in the practice of helping others and think of helping others, the practice of great compassion cannot be overcome by the wisdom realizing emptiness, because this wisdom of emptiness, which sees things to lack or any inherent existence. So when you are tinged with this inappropriate thinking or some kind of obsession with things, then that is rooted in our grasping at true existence of things. So regarding like the biased kind of love and affection, and we need to differentiate between those states of mind which are tinged or which happen due to the influence of this inappropriate thinking. So sometimes we have some kind of a biologically equipped love and affection, and those are biased, and for which we do not need to use reason. But they are, in such cases, they are tinged by or under the influence of this called inappropriate mentation. Whereas those positive attitudes like love and compassion and so forth, which you have to deliberately cultivate by understanding the reason for doing so, I mean, these cannot be the ones under the influence of these the inappropriate mentation. So Langri Thangpa was known to always have a very serious and dark face. And so these are because of his practice of compassion, genuine practice as a sincere Dharma practitioner. And therefore, we need to make distinction between those practices or the experiences which happen due to the influence of negative, the inappropriate mentation, and those which are not under this influence. And then the second giving, or the perfection of and practice of joyous effort is gathering the Dharma, virtuous Dharma. And then the third one is joyous effort in pursuing the benefit of other sentient beings. And so there are different types of, in this practice of patience, there are certain practices which are given also in the Bodhisattva Charya Avatara, which are termed as pride. And so feeling that you will be able to engage in the practices to help other sentient beings, and that you will be able to combat those of the negative emotions, and holding that kind of pride and confidence. So these are things, experiences which we must develop and not feel discouraged to engage in. So when you feel tired having put effort in the practices, then you should take a time off, which is in the case of Bodhisattva Charyavatara. It says this is termed as the time when you abandon the practice. So it's not just called I mean, it's taking time off from the practice and resting in order to be able to continue with your practice in a later time.
Mm-hmm.
And so regarding the practice of the confidence that you developed, which was mentioned earlier, it comes under the title, there are a title which says there are the four powers when you engage or rely on the favorable conditions of joyous effort. You should cultivate this power of conviction with regard to the Mahayana by reflecting on the benefits of the practice of the bodhisattvas, and in particular, and also by engaging in the practices of adopting the white dharmas and discarding the black ones, or with regard to karma. And also, if you go against the precepts or the practices of bodhisattvas, what are the disadvantages? I mean, you should, by thinking about these, is that the power of conviction. And then there is this the pride or the confidence where you think that I will... accomplish or the goal or the practices and without relying on anybody else, but I will do them myself, that you can do it. And the next is the perfection of concentration. So meditative concentration is that state of mind which remains single-pointedly focused without distraction by focusing on the virtuous object. And when you have completed the familiarization with that, then you have the the perfection of concentration. And then with regard to the division and within it, there is a division from the point of view of its nature, which are the mundane and supramundane concentrations. And then with regard to the from the point of view of the direction, there are the shamatha, calm abiding, and the penetrative insight, and the union or the combination of these two. So from the point of the different dimensions, I think, there are these three. And then from the point of view of the function, there are three. Which are first is of which the first is the concentration which sustains a blissful experience of the body and mind, and then the second is the concentration which accomplishes higher qualities within oneself, and then the concentration of serving sentient beings. And so with regard to the first one, so with regard to developing concentration, first you look at the object that you would use as your focus of meditation, and then that object forms its image in your mind. And when you actually engage in the meditation, cultivating concentration, you focus on that image that is formed of the object. And if you choose one's gurus or a Buddha statue and feel that there is an actual Buddha before or a guru before you. So when you focus your on your object or the which is the image formed in your mind, you should make sure that your mind is focused on the object that you have chosen or the image, and not get distracted. So here it says that one should actually focus on the object that has, you have chosen. Regarding that object, it should be at the level of at the same height as your navel. Usually, we say that we should have the object somewhere at the level of your mid eyebrows. And first, don't go into the details of the image, but just imagine the statue of the Buddha, for example, which is a golden color, bright, and so having focused your mind on the object, if you are overcome with either mental laxity or the mental sinking or excitement, then you will not be able to develop shamatha. And then when your mind is rather feeling, you are feeling dull in your mind, that also is an obstacle to developing shamatha. So you should also have a very have clarity of mind and appearance of the clarity of the object as well. And so, get rid of those dullness falling on your mind due to mental sinking. So when mental sinking happens, the mind is rather low caste. And therefore, you need something to elate yourself up, raise the mind up, and therefore you should use certain objects. So in order for you not to have this mental laxity, it is said that you should be in a place which is high up. And so for that purpose, it says in the 21's in the 21 small letters, and also the swift path, a graded path of enlightenment, there is mention of mixing one's mind, instruction of mixing one's mind with the mind and the energy with space to uplift your mind. And so having overcome this mental laxity, then you should continue with your meditation as you have done before. And so, and then when you are about to, when the subtle mental excitation is about to set in, and whereby it's attracted, your mind gets attracted towards there's some attractive object, and you should immediately stop it. and bind your mind on your focus on the object that you have chosen. So if you are unable to, if there is difficulty in overcoming mental excitation because of paying attention to the beauty or the attractive nature of the things, and if you have difficulty, then you have to leave the meditation at that point, it says, and you should meditate on and reflect on impermanence, and then also the suffering of lower realms of existence, and try to withdraw the mind in. And so these are the certain instructions to forcefully cut the mental excitation. And so with regard to the nine steps now, there are, first is placing the mind. And so this we can do. And as you keep doing your practice, you might at some point feel that you are, your negative emotions are in fact increasing, unlike the experience that you have before. And therefore, with the help of the second power force, which is the reflection, the power of reflection, you should be able to sustain the concentration that your mind, with which you have tied your mind to the object. And then there will be an experience where the negative emotions have rather been silenced. And therefore, you need to you might feel that sometimes the negative emotions arise, and at that point, you should direct your mind towards the focus. And so, when the mind gets distracted in between, you should bring it back. So it's the second this state or the second step in the nine steps. So we are at the fifth power, which is the power of joyous effort.
Mm. We are here in the section with respect to the cultivation of the meditative serenity. And having completed the 9 mental placements, the mental placements such as the mental placement and continuous placement, then patch-like placement and so on. The next is about relying upon generating the serenity mind through powers. His Holiness comments that he knows many friends whose meditative concentration is very clear and there is no laxity. And the main obscuration for developing the meditative serenity are two, which are the laxity and excitement. And the third important factor that we need to cultivate is the vigilance. And once your mind are settled, so since the mind and also the wind travels together, so as your mind settles, so the wind in your body also becomes settled. And due to that factor, and it also brings a lot of affect your brain. In this way, you will be able to generate the pliancy, mental pliancy. And also in developing the pliancy, first we need to develop the physical pliancy or the serviceability of one's physical, and later one need to generate the serviceability of the mind, which is called as the mental pliancy. And to summarize these mental placements and also taking the other measures in order to develop the meditative serenity has been presented in extensive in the text of Lord Maitreya, the 5 sets of texts, and also we can find in the series of the Bodhisattva ground, the Sharvaka ground, Pratigya Buddha grounds, and so on. And also it is explained very detailed in the stages of meditation. And next is the presentation on the perfection, the 6th perfection, that is wisdom. And we will move to liberation in the palm of your hand. I think there is one page missing in His Holiness' text, and so he's referring to the other text.
Mm. Then we are on page number 538. Training yourself for the two types of bodhicitta. Sorry, we are on page number 546, day 18. The actual contemplation on the interchange of self and others. We have already covered the contemplation on the faults arising, the faults resulting from self-cherishing, and the good qualities resulting from cherishing others. The same teaching is contained in four verses. I see this chronic illness of self-cherishing. After seeing what these resulting faults and good qualities are, you should interchange the self with others. That is, thoughts of self-cherishing should change places with thoughts of ignoring the needs of others. But this does not mean you should think that the self is now others and that others have become the self. In the past, you have ignored others because you cherish yourself. Now these two attitudes should change places. Thus, this interchange is a term for the transference of your self-cherishing onto others. You train the mind by feeling, I used to ignore others, but from now on, I should ignore my own needs. I've been cherishing myself, but from now on, I shall cherish others. Through this sort of familiarization process, you will be able to effect such an interchange. Think in terms of this analogy. When you stay a while on the first side of a mountain, you think of that side as being the near side. With this serving as the basis, the way to meditate on giving and taking. Taking is done to build of compassion, giving to build of love. Our root text says, train alternately in giving and taking. This is to increase the preceding contemplation. In many written teachings on giving and taking, the former is treated first. However, in practice, it is the latter that is carried out first. In fact, it may be appropriate to do only the taking and omit the giving. It would not be of benefit to give away happiness before having taken away suffering. So practice as follows in order to build up your compassion. Think I shall remove all suffering from all sentient beings, my mothers, and generate compassion. Then visualize all their suffering being shed like hair shaped off with a razor and taking the form of black rays that dissolve into the self-cherishing at your heart. So when we refer to as Avalokiteshvara, we always worship Avalokiteshvara as the Buddha of compassion. Then Manjushri as the Buddha of wisdom. Continue reading from page 547, the last para. You could do this in more detail. Think that the suffering due to the heat of the hot hells dissolves, fire and all, into your heart or inhalation, and that it dissolves into the demon of your self-cherishing. Contemplate that you take on the sufferings, sins and obscuration, etc., from the beings in the cold hells, hungry ghosts, animals, demigods, humans, and so on. Now visualize that they are without suffering and have been purified of sins and obscurations. Pray, may this ripen on me. But when you do this taking, do not take from either your gurus or Buddhas. Sorry. There are many types of people with different degrees of ability. Some beginners find that they are not capable of meditating on giving and taking. for this type of people, built of your taking by starting with yourself. In other words, meditate in the morning that you are taking on the suffering you will experience that evening, then move on to taking the next day's suffering. Then you are suffering for the rest of the month, then rest of the year, then rest of your present rebirth, the next rebirth, and so on. Move on to your parents, your relatives, friends, strangers, enemies, and so on, until you include all sentient beings. Train yourself in each of the steps. And of course, there is a difference between self and other, and there are two. But then we pay a lot of importance to self and to ignore the other. And the reason is that you, the self, as yourself, aspire to have happiness and do not wish to go under suffering. So even if you look from this respect, the reason is same even for the other people. We are all common in terms of wishing to have happiness and so on. So even though you yourself are, even though you may be a great person, a famous, or a lama or something, but you are only one in terms of the other, which are countless. So therefore, we need to generate the mind that we should be able to forsake yourself, which is only one, for the benefit of many, which is the other. So in order, for the sake of, to benefit the other people, we should be able to forsake one. And when we also explained about cherishing other people, it doesn't mean that you're neglecting yourself or you're ignoring yourself. And if you really want to do things for yourself in a very intelligent way, Converting circumstances through thought. The first is two further subheadings: converting them through analysis, converting them by means of the view. It says in the Guru Puja, when the universe is completely filled with the fruits of seeing, our root text on mind training similarly says, when the universe is full of sin, turn these unfortunate conditions into the path to enlightenment. That is, at present, whenever the disagreeable occurs, like illness, enemies, spirits, etc., we put the blame on others because we do not understand that all sickness is the outcome of our karma. We claim that it is due to food, evil spirits, and so on. However, when we look into the thing or root to be blamed, we find that everything undesirable comes about through karma, just as I have taught in the cause and effect section of the small scope. And even that karma came about through our self-cherishing, so self-cherishing is fundamentally to blame. When a thief robs you of your valuables, you do not blame the thief. Blame instead your evil karma and the thing that made you develop such karma, your self-cherishing. Thus, whenever you are faced with sickness, suffering, unfavorable circumstances, etc., you must think how this helps you to achieve enlightenment. As was said, sickness, sins, and obscurations are a broom. That is, whenever you feel sick and so on, feel that this evil karma, these sins and obscurations, the result of which you would normally be obliged to experience in the lower realms, had ripened instead while you're still in this present rebirth. This should make you feel very happy. Further, you should be glad and feel, I've already been practicing giving and taking. By taking on the sins and obscurations of sentient beings, now I have actually managed to achieve this. Pray that the rest of their sufferings may ripen on you and imagine in your meditation that this successfully relieves sentient beings of all the sufferings they would otherwise have experienced for themselves. Wholeheartedly think while you are doing this taking how welcome it would be if I could now actually take on the suffering of sentient beings. If you practice in this way, even sickness will not be a hindrance for you. Your virtuous practices will increase, as in the story of the disciple of Kunpeng Jianzhen, who contracted leprosy and was cured at Kimo Dazang. It is stated in the 8th chapter of the Guide to the Bodhisattva that we need to find various means to subdue the thought of cherishing oneself. And these are detailedly explained in the 8th chapter. And since we have the self-cherishing thought and also the grasping at the true existence, they are living in the same strength in within us. But whereas those who are normal learners, the arahats, so even they do not have the self-grasping of inherent existence, but they have the self-cherishing thought. So therefore, the self-cherishing thought, which is combined with the self-grasping in inherent existence, is the worst, which is the worst and the strongest. Therefore, we have to be very careful that this does not result in great loss for the other people and yourself. And we also look at the other people as having existing by their own nature. Continue to read from page number 553, the second para. Engaging in the deeds of Bodhisattva says the good quality of suffering is that it removes arrogance through sorrow. One develops compassion for the beings in samsara, ever seen and rejoices in virtue. When faced with suffering, you become unhappy, and this removes pride. You also feel compassion for others by reason of your own suffering, and will want to abandon its causes. When suffering does not come our way, we feel that things are going well and are happy. We should not be like this, for it is said, do not be glad when happy, rejoice when sad. Happiness uses of accumulated merit, unhappiness purifies sin and obscurations. Holding a high position is tantamount to being under house arrest, as in case of high lamas and officials who cannot go wherever they wish. Tuchol Losa Namgyel said, they said that high rank is like being under house arrest. Low rank is a royal divvying of the victorious ones. That is, all the scholar adepts of the past occupy low positions and reach the state of Buddhahood. Even Drom Rinpoche prostrated himself before Shangden Kubichang. We ourselves should be like him and take a low position, just as water always finds the lowest level. That way it will be easy for us to keep friendships.
Mm.
Continues the reading from page 554. We ourselves should be like him and take a low position, just as water always finds the lowest level. Do not be glad when praised, be happy when censured. Criticism highlights your faults. In other words, your pride increases enormously when others praise you, but this will let you down in this and in future lives. You cannot see your own faults, and although being criticized is now pleasant now, afterward you will examine your actions, and this will make you careful to modify your behavior. It is said, slander is a favor from the gods. That is, slander is a divine boon. So whenever you get entangled in bad circumstances, such as upsetting slanders, think of them in that way. When you are happy, feel that it is the result of virtue, and this will make you very happy to meditate on bodhicitta and so on. Converting circumstances through the view, our present texts say, regard all deceptive appearances as being the four kayas. If you look at the world in this way, you can understand very clearly. Even for the dog, a dog who lives friendly with other dogs, so of course, he also seems to be more happy. And a dog which really always fights with other dogs also is in problem. So similarly, even a human, a person who also lives harmony with other people, ends up having more friends. And human is also a social animal, so therefore we need friends to survive. So therefore, once we need a friend, we cannot be lonely or staying alone all the time. Even at the time of dying, if you have a good heart, even at the time of dying, such kind of person, people will remember you, they will pray for you, even recite even a money mantra for you. So if you are a very self-cherishing person, so people will actually rejoice when you die that that person is dead now. So in this way, if you land in such situation, then even your children and the other family members will feel ashamed that my father, when he passed away, people really appreciate his death. So this is a shame for whole family. So therefore, in the whole world, as long as we are more altruistic to our altruistic intended person, we have more friends. So we do not need to look far for that. Even in our daily life, and look very near, and we have all the examples in front of us that the altruistic mind brings more happiness. And Shantideva has stated in the Bodhisattva Guide of Life, the bodhicitta is the one who cures all the illness, and bodhicitta is the one who pacifies all the afflicted emotions, and is also the sun that enlightens the whole darkness, and so on. So when such kind of teachings exist, it seems like the self-cherishing thought cannot even held their head high. So they have to keep a very low level when the praise of bodhicitta are so well explained and they are so powerful when practiced. And when we refer to the different phenomena in terms of obscured phenomena and the evident ones, so I think the most important is the evident phenomena that we can see with our own naked eyes and experience. So therefore, something that which we can experience, and we cannot go against that fact. And as I told yesterday, that something which is against the logic reasoning, and if a person preaches that, cannot be a valid person. So if we just do some reflection about the evident phenomena, then the samsara as the ocean of suffering is something that we can experience for ourselves. And also look at all the sufferings that are man-created, man-made sufferings. And when we see the bad sides of the afflicted emotions, then we think also tend to see the more negative side of the self-cherishing thoughts. And most of these sufferings and the problems comes because of our short-sighted and also depending too much on the self-cherishing. So therefore, the mind training teachings are real instructions, real, very evident instruction for us to practice. And if we think about this life, our food, our cloth, houses, and also fame and popularity, it all comes from the animals or the mother sentient beings. And also our higher rebates for the next and subsequent rebate also have to come from the practicing ethical discipline, which is again depend on sentient beings. And in order to attain liberation, we need to have three trainings practice. And also the foundation of the three trainings again is the training of ethical discipline. And ethical discipline practice and restraining yourself from indulging in negative actions and in engaging in the positive actions again depends on the sentient beings. So therefore, the sentient beings are the foremost refuge and the practice due to the kindness of the sentient beings due to which we are able to realize the liberation and also the enlightenment state. So if we do reflection in this way, then we will find to see the value and feel great rejoice. And then we came to think that the thought cherishing other is our best companion. Continue reading from page 554. Converting circumstances through the view. Our present texts regard all deceptive appearances as being the four kayas. However, such a statement follows the old style of explanation from the first dissemination of the teachings, and on examination, we find it to be a little unsatisfactory. When we look into the nature of any suffering that has arisen, we are told it is the first place wisdom truth body because it is not produced from anything and so forth. Then there is also another presentation in the Bodhisattva's Guide of Life that the sentient beings do not expect anything from us in terms of helping others. If that is not the case, then how can we generate faith towards the truth of cessations and so on? So even though by generating faith and devotion towards the truth of cessation, it does not make any difference to the truth of cessation itself, but it makes a difference to the person who does that, who do that practice. So therefore, even though your expression or your practice of altruistic intention towards the other people doesn't make any difference to the other, but it will make one difference. And also to one's enemy, the phrases which Shantideva used in with respect to generating the compassion towards one's enemy are great and wonderful. the eight verses of mind training is very condensed. And I used to say that if you memorize those verses, it will be very good. Something like also the three principal texts and also in praise of Tibetan origination. And in the intervals, if you recite the text, some verses from it, and then to reflection on those lines and think in your mind the contents, it will be very helpful. I'm sorry, I've read from the wrong page number, so we are just arriving on 546 now. Day 18, Kyabje Pabongo Rinpoche gave a brief talk to set our motivations, quoting that the great Dhammaraja Tsongkhapa swept in the stream of four strong currents, bound by the fetters of hardest of actions, trapped in the iron mesh of self-grasping, smother in the blackness of ignorance. They are endlessly born and reborn in the world and continuously tortured by these sufferings. He restated the titles of above headings and then reviewed the sevenfold cause and effect type of mind training for bodhicitta. And if you look at the term itself of changing self with other, then the term itself may implies or give an impression to you that, of course, your own purpose or your own means are completely neglected, but this is not the case here. Continuously reading from page 546. The actual contemplation on the interchange of self and others. We have already covered the contemplation on the faults resulting and the good qualities resulting from cherishing others. This same teaching is contained in four verses. I see this chronic illness of self-cherishing. After seeing what these resulting faults and good qualities are, and when it comes to the changing self with other, by practicing compassion, you take into yourself all the other sufferings. And when you practice the loving kindness, you wish and you pray that all your happiness and the virtues be given to other people. So this is the basic meaning of giving and taking. Continues the reading from page number 547. With these sufferings as the basis, the way to meditate on giving and taking. Taking is done to build up compassion, giving to build up love. Our root text says, train alternately in giving and taking. This is to increase the preceding contemplations. In many reading teachings on giving and taking, the former is treated first. However, in practice, it is the latter that is carried out first. In fact, it may be appropriate to do only the taking and omit the giving. It would not be of benefit to give away happiness before having taken away suffering. So practice as follows in order to build up your compassion. Think, I shall remove all suffering from all sentient beings, my mothers, and generate compassion. Then visualize all their suffering being shed like hair shaped off with a razor, and take the form of black rays that dissolve into the self-cherishing at your heart. You could do this in more detail. Think that the suffering due to the heat of hot hells dissolves, fire and whole, into your heart and inhalation, and that it dissolves into the demon of your self-cherishing. Contemplate that you take on the sufferings, sins and obscurations, etc., from the beings in the cold hells, hungry ghosts, animals, demigods, humans, gods and so forth, right up to the 10-level bodhisattvas. Now visualize that they are without suffering and have been purified of sins and obscurations. Pray, may this ripen on me. But when you do this taking, do not take from either your gurus or the Buddhas. There are many types of people with different degrees of ability. Some beginners find that they are not capable of meditating on giving and taking. For this type of people, build up your taking by starting with yourself. In other words, meditate in the morning that you're taking on the suffering. You will experience that evening. Then move on to taking the next day's suffering. Then you're suffering for the rest of the month, then the rest of the year, then the rest of your present rebirth, then your next rebirth, then all your future rebirths. Move on to your parents, your relatives, and friends, strangers, enemies, and so on, until you include all sentient beings. Train yourself in each of the steps and then move on to the next, taking on the suffering, sins, obscurations, etc. You ought to follow these steps because you will not be inclined at first to take suffering from such people as your enemies. So sometimes meditate starting with yourself, moving outward in this way. Reading from page 549, the last para. In other words, to improve your remembrance of the practice of giving and taking, recite some verses on the subject at all times. There are a few such verses in the Golden Race Mind Training, but if you do not know this, it is sufficient to recite these lines from the Guru Puja. Venerable, compassionate Guru, bless me. May all sufferings, sins and obscurations of all beings, once my mother's, ripen on me, now without exception. May I give my happiness and virtue to others, and may all beings have happiness. And this is also presented by Nagarjuna, that the sentient beings, as sentient beings as the source of all the happiness in the world. And there are a few verses from the precious garland which I used to remember all the time. And of course, since these lines come from Nagarjuna, I have a kind of special liking to his lines. And if you remember those lines by Nagarjuna very often, then it's really effective. I think it was the Master Chekhava. It was Kishilang Dharba, and when he listened to the Chekhaba's lines, then he did not get much attracted at the first time. Then later, when Chekhaba was reciting the lines, that all the affluences and all the practices that we have and the realizations is due to the mother sentient beings, then Gishe Langtaba developed a genuine respect to the Gishe Chekhava. So there was another verses that was written by Gishe Langtaba, which is not in the eight verses that we recite normally. And at that time, Gishe Chekhava said that there is no one who is not accepting Nagarjuna. So if you accept Nagarjuna as a great master, then the lines from his precious garland that we can find in some lines in the Nagarjuna's precious garland, that if someone wants to be happy, then there is no better way to change the self with the other. So this we have to accept. And in Tibet, different traditions, whether it's Nyingma, Kagyu, and so on, even Jonang, so they all have great respect for Nagarjuna. So if we take the lines from the Guru Puja, maybe different traditions have their own different words to express. So therefore, Nagarjuna's verses are better in this case. And when we do the practice of giving and taking, then we need to think about these verses of Nagarjuna and Shantideva. Otherwise, if you just recite mantra, it will not be a benefit. In Heart Sutra, the mantra of Gad Gad Baragad, there are different ways to explain that. The Gad Gad just to be gone and to go beyond the ocean and also be the base for enlightenment. So we need to put those understanding and meaning to your own mindstream. So now we do not have any kind of aspiration for liberation, and also do not have any aspiration for omniscient mind. So now when we see these presentations on the liberation and enlightenment and so on, then we need to generate a mind that may I be also able to gain the enlightenment and so on. So when you cultivate such kind of thoughts from the day-to-day, and then you generate a sense of urgency that without developing or without gaining that state of enlightenment, then I have to do it at any cost. And then gradually, as afflictions withdrew and afflictions decrease, and then you get a kind of such a mind when we make effort. And at the end, you can generate the same level of mind wishing to be liberated, to attain liberation effortlessly, which is when you reach the first level of the mantra, first level as explained in Heart Sutra, the Gadha. Then gradually your wisdom also increase, wisdom realizing emptiness also progress further. And then the second Gate or gone beyond. Then when you are in the third level of seeing the emptiness, then you have realized the emptiness directly, without any obscuration, so which is when you reach the third one, that is Paragade. Then from next onwards, you start to eliminate the obscurations with respect to omniscient mind. Then the fourth level comes. Then as you progress further in terms of the 10 grounds and so on, and ultimately, when you are in the eighth ground or at the end of the seventh ground, then when you pacify all the afflicted emotions, then it becomes, when you attain the eighth one, you becomes what we call the normal learning or the arahats who are free of all sufferings. So this is the same mental continuum that we have before, and now it progresses further into a mental consciousness where it is free of all the afflictions. I do not remember the name now. It is one of the initiations in the Indian traditions. So the liberation state or the complete enlightenment state is not something to be given to you by someone other, as it is stated by Lord Buddha himself, that his understanding or realization cannot be moved from him to another person, or neither the sufferings to be erased by hand. So to produce the enlightenment state, the cause or the continuity is still within us from now on, and that potential or the capacity within us has to be grown further into the enlightenment. So it is not in other persons, it is not in any other person that you have to request them and they give it to us. So therefore, the first line that the enlightenment state is not given by any other, and it does not belong to any one people. So then what is the state of Buddha? So the state of Buddha is to realize yourself as being free of all the afflicted emotions and obscurations. And also when it comes to the afflictions, as it is presented in ornaments of the sutra, that it is free of all the obscurations. And also in the great completion practice, it is explained in the same way. And for the last three grounds, which are called the pure grounds, in these three, we focus or work on eliminating the obscuration to enlightenment. And as Kunjan Lama stated in the tenets, that when it comes to the very subtle level of the obscuration, the omniscient mind, it is only explained very clearly in the Tantra, which is this moment is a very gross level of our mind. So the antidote to that gross level of mind has to be the very subtle, the steady of my mind, which can be explained in the Tantra. So the third one is to have a base on the foundation or the base for the bodhicitta or the enlightened, which is the fifth level. So if you think in this way, you feel very rejoiced. So till now, you have meditated on the selflessness, and gradually you find that the self-grasping mind can be tamed. Then as the gross level and later the subtle or the very in evident level of the self-grasping also being eliminated, then you see that you are able to attain the liberation. And also, as we find in the Vajrabhairava's prayer, that when we realize the arahat level of the tantra according to the tantra treatise, then one becomes the normal learner. So we can also recite the text as from the Guru Puja, that Venerable Compassionate Guru, bless me, may all the sufferings, sins and obscurations of all beings once my mothers. So this is what I explained before with respect to the mantra of Heart Sutra, about Tathagata Gati Gati Paragati. And if you have some understanding of those, and if you recite that mantra, Tathagata Gati Paragati, then it will be beneficial reason to it. Then if you translate the meaning of the Gati Gati into gone, thus gone, and beyond the samsaric world, and have the basis for enlightenment. So if we understand with such understanding of the meaning, and if you recite the mantra, then you will find a potential or some strength within you that you can do that, or you can attain the enlightenment. So this is also presented by Shantideva in his text, that when we see such a kind of the altruistic intention, that it once you practice it or cultivate it, you will go from the higher and higher rebirth. So therefore, who will be there to not practice such kind of altruistic intention? Reading from page 550, there are even stories of past lamas who used to recite this verse on their rosary. You must also employ some methods to increase your bodhicitta while you go about your daily routine. You should refer to Autamsaka Sutra and the Sutra on Jurisdiction of Utterly Pure Endeavor. Those of you who wish to make bodhicitta your main practice should constantly consult and contemplate the Autamsaka Sutra, just as the great Tsongkhapa did, according to the biography of this embodiment of Manjushri. And so we will cover that later. The root text then says, mount these two on the energy winds. In other words, when you have mastered this giving and taking visualization a little, combine giving with breathing out and taking with breathing in. At first, you may not be able to mount this on the energy winds, but with continued familiarity, you will manage it. Now I think the time for lunch has arrived. So we will stop here. We are on page number 551. Lord, 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 Lord,